Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots non-profit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on kx935.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
Hi, I'm Peter Asher, and this is your full English breakfast. Sausages, baked beans, fried bread, and great music. KX93.5.
Napoleon, are you coming to bed?
Not tonight, Josephine. I have an headache. What is that infernal racket?
The British are coming! The British are coming!
Put down your hairdryers and surrender in the name of the British Empire.
The British Hair Company has now relocated to 750 South Coast Highway and taken over management of Paris Salon. The British Hair Company. Passion, energy and excellence through education. 949-497-8345.
God save the Queen!
I wore City Country Bowl 2 square on your body. Then I'll begin.
Gentlemen, attention.
On KX93.5, this is your full English breakfast. Tuck in.
Good morning. It's KX93.5, it's Laguna's only FM. I'm Jason Fetty. It's your full English breakfast. Right here. An all new full English breakfast. It's Expat Sunday, where we've invited in some people from around the sort of locality. Brits or people from the Septuagint. Last week, Dr. Janet Chance was here. She's Irish, but not, you know, Americans don't know the difference, so it's all right. Irish, South African, New Zealand, Australian. Some woman from Singapore last night, somebody accused her of being South African at the gig I did. But anyway, doesn't matter, does it? It's all good fun, and anybody that cares about that kind of thing is in church, so very good morning to you. This morning we've got Sharon James here. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning.
How are you? Get close to that mic so people can hear your dulcet tones.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good.
You're
glad
right.
It's radio and not visual.
Yeah, really. Well,
too early.
Yeah, that's. I've certainly got the face for that, and the body for radio, and the entire all my organs are for radio too. Now, Sharon's got a show on this very radio station on a Sunday night at 6 o'clock, the Sharon Hour. And you and I are pals, and we play tennis together. And but I don't know really very that much about you, really. You know, just that you come to the station and you seem like a nice lady. And you worked in television before, I do know that, and the sort of visual arts. But tell us a bit. Tell us a bit about your beginnings in life.
My beginnings. Well, I was a producer, an advertising producer mainly, produced commercials, most of my professional life.
Any big commercials that we would recognise? You didn't do Plink, Fizz, Fizz, Oh, What a Relief It Is, did you?
I didn't, but that was my agency, actually.
Is that right?
Yes. I actually produced the original I Love New York campaign.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I Heart New York.
The upstate version. There was a Broadway show version, and then there was the upstate.
Right.
I did the upstate version. So, yeah, that's probably the biggest kind of best-known campaign. Yeah. I did Cadbury's Fruit and Nut in London.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Everyone's a fruit and nut case.
Everyone's a fruit and nut. I did Heinz Super Day. Remember Heinz
Super Day? No, but fruit and nut case, that's a big one.
Yeah.
Everyone's a fruit and nut. What was the name of the actor? Very famous actor was in those.
I don't remember, but Graham Stark did the voiceovers for
that right?
our stuff, if you remember Graham Stark. And actually recorded... I recorded at the Guinness Brewery with him in Dublin, and he was doing a Christmas show with Bing Crosby. Yeah. And I met Bing Crosby, and Bing Crosby was like the grumpiest man you've ever seen.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. How nice to know that he was a grumpy old
brute. I know. And he was maybe grumpy because we were in his room while they were recording, you know, and we weren't paying attention to him because we were paying attention to Graham Stark. But I know, I hate the idea that he was grumpy. And he had more lines on his face than I'd ever seen in my life at that time. It was probably he looked like me, like I look now. Yeah. But
was
you
this
know,
the 1970s or when was this?
It was, yeah. It would have been. I left England in 1974, so yeah, it would have been like early 70s.
Where were you born, Sharon?
I was born in London.
Yeah.
in Hampstead.
Oh, the posh end. I always think of you as being a bit of a posh bird, actually.
Oh, I don't know. It was not Hampstead's not so much posh as bohemian in a way.
Right.
Lots of artists and actors and... it's still like that, actually.
It is, but it's very expensive to live there now.
It is expensive
to live anywhere in London, of course.
Yeah, the whole of London's really expensive. Yeah,
but Hampstead's lovely, and it's got,
it's lovely. It's got the heath, it's got cobblestone streets, it's got this huge wild kind of, what's that movie?
American wild Werewolf heath. In London.
Well, no, people don't know what a heath is.
Right.
It's not a park. It's just kind
of... It's a bar of chocolate here, isn't it? A heath bar. That's what it is.
It's wild. It's like...
It's like a big wild park that they've almost left to sort of overgrow and do its own thing.
Right. And you don't want to go in there at night, but during the day, it's beautiful. And there's a pond where you kind of... We used to swim in the pond.
Yeah.
There was Hampstead. There was a ladies' pond, and there were all these old ladies used to swim nude. Yeah. In the ladies' pond, because it was all ladies, and then there was a men's pond, where they used to swim. You used to swim around the ducks and the lily ponds. Huh. I used to go there and do my homework. And
very
swim.
British, very sort of quintessentially British thing, and not. And you wouldn't know that you were in. You don't feel like you're in a city.
You would not feel like
when you're up
exactly
there.
Exactly right.
It's very village atmosphere as well in the because London's a sort of collection of, don't you think, a sort of collection of little hamlets rather than one big sprawl.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the amazing thing, because it's a pedestrian city and because it has a fantastic public transportation system, you can just walk for miles and miles. I mean, Paris is like that too. All those big cities that have great public transportation are fantastic because you can just walk till you're tired, and you know that when you're tired, you can just hop on an underground or the bus or whatever. So you don't have to sort of measure... Okay, I'm halfway tired now because I've got to get all the way back.
There are cities like that here, though, aren't there? You know, San Francisco's like that, I always think. You know, you can really walk around in San Francisco. You can walk the whole city in a day.
I suppose, but it's so, it's so drawn out. I mean, the things with New York and London is it's sort of like a little cosmos in each area.
Right.
So you have everything you need in one area. San Francisco, downtown is so different from kind of up where... all those nice houses are and the ocean is. So you have to kind of choose your area.
Huh.
Whereas European cities sort of have, and New York even, have everything consolidated.
Right, it's one place.
In individual,
kind of
there's like a shoemaker there, there's a cafe there, a supermarket there. You know, you're kind of, within about 5 or 6 blocks, you've got everything you could need if you live there, I suppose.
I have a friend in England who says that wherever you live in the world, you live within like a four-mile radius. People say, I live in New York. But in reality, they probably live within 4 miles. You know, they go to work, they go to the gym, they go to some club, some movie theatre, some whatever, library.
You mean their life exists
their life
within
exists
a 4 miles
within,
radius?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Regardless of the size of the city that you live in, most people don't really travel outside of their little 4 mile radius.
Except
California.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Because you can drive 15 miles for a haircut here.
Exactly.
Yeah. Listen, let's play a bit of music and we'll come back and talk. This you've picked Love and Marriage as your first song.
Why? As a child.
But, so why would you pick this song?
I don't know, as a child, you're so romantic and you think, you just want to get married. And this just seemed lovely. Love and Marriage.
Yeah,
it seems ridiculous now, of course, but it was lovely at the time.
All right, well, let's play. It's Frank Sinatra, of course, and Love and Marriage on KX93.5. Sharon James is here for Full English Breakfast, where we interview expats.
Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. This I tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other. Love and marriage, love and marriage, it's an institute you can't disparage. Ask the local gentry and they will
say it's elementary. Try, try, try to separate them. It's an illusion. Try, 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 and you will only come to this conclusion. Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. Dad was told by mother, you can't have one, you can't have none, you can't have one without the other. Separate them, it's an illusion. Try, 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 and you will only come to this conclusion. Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. Dad was told by mother, you can't have one, you can't have one without the other.
It's Gigs 93.5, it's Laguna's Only FM, Full English Breakfast with me, Jason Fetty, interviewing or talking to, having a chat with, really, Sharon James, who's a local TV producer and also has a show on this radio station at 6 o'clock on a Sunday called The Sharon Hour. Well worth listening to. Frank Sinatra, Love and Marriage. There, men go together with women like a man needs a woman like a fish needs a bicycle. Isn't that right?
I don't think.
when the music starts, it sounds like it's going to be a comedy song, and yet he's deadly
straight,
serious.
Totally.
It's deadly straight, yeah. And Sinatra is not
satirical.
But he's not a naive man. I don't think of him as that at all, by any means. No. You know, but and yet at the time, that's what that was the. The zeitgeist, if you like.
Right.
Love, you don't have love without marriage, and you don't get marriage without love.
Most of his songs are pretty sentimental, aren't they?
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true, yeah. Yeah, there's not much irony or whatever. And yet, if you hear him speak between songs, if you hear a live show, it's a very funny guy, very witty guy, and sort of, like I was saying, but he takes the piss a bit, you know what I mean? He's not just he doesn't play it straight. Between songs, that Rat Pack were very, very funny, and they had a good time.
Right.
So So we're if we're doing this like the chronology of your life, which we've got 46 minutes left.
Yeah, and I'm old.
So when you were a kid, you had this sort of idea that you just wanted to get married, and then did you get married?
I got married, yes, yeah. But not till later, actually. I got married quite late in life, really.
How old were you?
I was 32.
That is old to get married.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, definitely.
Certainly in back in those days, Sharon.
Back in those days.
Did you get married in black and white?
No, I got married in... I actually got married in white, but I picked out my own wedding stuff. We picked a date that we both knew we'd be available because we were both busy... working people.
Busy media people. What was your husband's...
My husband was an actor, and he was doing a show. Actually, it was going to Broadway, but it was in Washington. And we picked the 23rd of December because we thought, well, you know, it's 2 days before Christmas. We'll both be available. As it happened, neither of us were. I had to race back. I was shooting in California.
So what did you do? Did you get a couple from Central Casting to do it instead?
Well, no. So in the end, because his show got extended a week, and in the end, he was actually performing at the White House on the day before our wedding, at the 22nd.
Is he a famous dude? Do we know this guy?
No, not that famous. But he was on Broadway, and not on Broadway at that point. He was at the Arena. And Jimmy Carter was president. That's how long ago it was.
Yeah.
And he wanted him, Stephen did the jitterbug on stage. He had to throw a woman over his head and under his legs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And when he did it on stage, you know, it was like a 20-piece big band. And when he did it on stage, you know, he then went off stage and had 10 minutes to catch his breath.
Yeah.
But he did it at the White House Christmas party. And just as he finished, you know, and the band went, blah, 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 Amy appeared at the top of the stairs. And Jimmy said, oh, Amy, you missed it. Would you do it again? And the band went, blah, 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 blah. And he had to actually do the whole thing all over again.
Wow. So, wow. So a talented guy. He was a dancer and a
we had to learn. Tommy Tune taught him how to dance. He had to learn how to dance and he had to learn how to sing. You know, he didn't go to acting school. He went to a normal college.
Right.
So, yeah. No, he was good. He was, commercials was our bread and butter for both of us. He was a commercial actor and I was a commercial producer.
How, the commercial business, has it changed very much over the years?
Oh, hugely.
Is it much more cynical now? It's not Mad Men anymore, is it?
Hugely. It's not Mad Men. Mine was Mad Men era, and we had tons of money. We'd stay at Beverly Hills Hotel, have dinner every night, you know, had huge budgets.
Yeah.
So that was the fun part, you know. It's not such a fun business a lot of the time.
I would think it's quite cutthroat because there is a lot of money at stake.
Yeah, exactly.
I did one commercial singing. It was a Budweiser commercial back in the early 80s or mid 80s. And I had to sing, "Everything else is just light." It was a Bud Light thing, right? And I got a disgusting amount of money for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, and residuals, right?
I didn't get residuals. We signed it off.
A buy-off.
We got a buy-off, but it was a phenomenal amount of money, which my manager ate the entire amount. But, you know, obviously he'd spent a fortune on me anyway, so it's fair dues. But the bass player that was in the band, he played bass. And because singers were in the actors' union and bass players in the musicians' union, and the actors had made a much better deal with, you know, a much better sort of legal deal, I got three times what he got, and he worked three times as hard as I did.
Yeah,
you know, as a musician, I just sang, you know.
Yeah.
But the guy that produced it, wrote it, sang on it. I mean, he made insane amount of money.
He did too.
You know, yeah, he did everything.
No, as an actor in those days, you know, Stephen got four national commercials. I mean, that was our annual income.
Yeah.
So that's like 4 days' work.
Yeah.
You know, and good annual income too.
God, there's plumbers out there going, oh, great.
I know, but that's not true anymore. No. Absolutely not true.
Well, the whole of the media's changed and the digital era's changed everything.
Yeah.
What's the next song here? We've got, it's French. It says, now let me try and read this. J'entends siffler.
Oh, come on. You can speak French. I've heard.
Le train. Le train. That's the next bit.
And in English, j'entends siffler le train, but in English it's, I heard the whistle blow.
Yeah.
But in France, I went to camps in the south of France, sort of from the age of 14 to 18.
See, I knew you were a posh bird.
No, but it's, you know,
we went to Blackpool on that.
And in fact, what you did is you crossed the Croisette. You know, our camp was at the top of the hill. You crossed the Croisette, and then you actually crossed down past the railroad tracks to the beach.
Uh-huh.
So, and this was the song of the day, J'entends siffler le train. And you actually did hear the train go past as you were on the beach. It would whistle and go past. And
very evocative. So,
very
good
evocative.
Memories of that.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's play it. It's Richard Anthony, actually, who's Egyptian. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he's Egyptian, Jewish father, British mother, and hence the Richard thing. But his real name's like Ibrahim or something. I don't know. I forget his real name, but... Anyway,
like
here it is.
It comes with a hog.
It's great. It starts with the train. You can hear it. There it is. All right, it's KX93.5. Absolutely gorgeous. It's Richard Anthony and Jean, oh God, here we go. J'entends siffler le train, I think is correct. And we're talking to Sharon James, who picked that song as part of Full English Breakfast's new thing where we interview expats, really, local people from the British Isles. Absolutely gorgeous, isn't it? Amazing. I remember that song in English from camps too. We called it 100 Miles because the chorus went 100 miles, 100 miles. Da, 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 da. And I hear the whistle blow. Gorgeous. Amazing to keep the sort of emotional pitch down at that level.
Absolutely.
Very, you know, rock and roll tends to be, you know, balls out, but that's really beautiful.
And I pick the songs kind of as a chronology of my life. You know, they're not necessarily the songs that, you know, I would go to immediately.
Well, this next one is very special. This next song is very special to you, and the story's great. I should say that this show is brought to you by the British Hair Company. Who are an Aveda hair salon thing. I would play the thing. I was going to play the It's British Hair Company thing, which we've recorded, but it's so loud and noisy.
Play it.
Shall I play it?
Yeah.
All right, we'll play it now, and that way, you know, people get the idea of what's going on. Here we go.
Napoleon, are you coming to bed?
Not tonight, Josephine. I have an headache. What is that infernal racket?
The British are coming! The British are coming!
Put down your hair dryers and surrender in the name of the British Empire.
The British Hair Company has now relocated to 750 South Coast Highway and taken over management of Paris Salon. The British Hair Company. Passion, energy and excellence through education. 949-497-8345.
God save the Queen!
Indeed, God save the Queen. Quite right too. And all who sail in her. Now, here's the thing about that, you know, they sponsor the show and they give us money and that's nice, but I didn't want to ruin the end of the song. that beautiful French song. Tell us a bit about this next song. Everyone knows the song, but I want you to introduce it.
Okay, so this is The Beatles. It's from Sergeant Pepper, and my then boyfriend and I. You see, I had mini marriages before I actually got married. So this was my boyfriend for about 4.5 years. He was an art director at Young and Rubicam, where I worked. And he looked the part of a rock star, but he wasn't. So Paul McCartney decided that he would try to make him into a rock star. So he taught him the guitar. We would go to this nightclub called Sibylla's during the day when nobody was there. It was run by this guy, Terry Howard, who actually worked at the agency as a copywriter. Anyway, so Paul said, if you want to come to our recordings, you know, we're doing this new album, Sergeant Pepper, come along. So we went to all the recordings on Sergeant Pepper, which was sort of composed and recorded between midnight and 3 a.m. at St. John's Wood Studios. And we were at the mix of this song you're going to hear. So if you can imagine, this is such a beautiful mix, if you can imagine it for real, in St. John's Wood Studios, blaring out of the
people
speakers.
Actually sitting at a board, a four-track board, I should say, which is utterly, anybody knows about music technology and audio recording, the idea that A Day in the Life would be recorded on four tracks. The board I'm sitting at now is just a radio board, the simplest board in the world, and it has, I don't know, 20-odd tracks here. So it's pretty astounding. What's astounding about that story is that Paul McCartney is classic, isn't it? The McCartney and Lennon so different. The McCartney would go, yeah, let's make him a star. Like the it's very cheesy McCartney move, that. If you remember Hard Day's Night, there's a scene in Hard Day's Night where there's an ad agency and there's a girl in there and she's being primed for, and they're making fun of the sort of a whole make you a star thing, because they, you know, Ringo's sitting there going, oh god, this is awful, because like, you know, they're trying to say that we're not like that, we're down to earth lads from Liverpool, right. You know, just ordinary guys, and we would never be involved in that sort of ridiculous world of advertising. And yet,
well, the first commercial I shot actually was at George Harrison's house.
Really?
And John, because we also were on I'm actually singing on All You Need Is Love. You know, we were invited to that session.
Oh, you were in that session?
I was in that session.
Listen to that.
So, yeah.
I knew you were a posh bird.
So, my boyfriend and I were the only kind of non-musicians there. So at the end of that, everyone was going on to this club, the Speakeasy. And Clive and I were sort of standing around like spare pricks at a wedding. Can you say that? Spare pricks
You've
at a wedding.
You've said it now.
Anyway, so, and John was the sweet one who noticed that we looked out of place. And he said, you know, do you want to come up into the booth? We're going to mix it and then come on to the Speakeasy with us.
How nice.
So we did that. And then we ran through the tunnel with them into the limo. And that experience about, actually, there was about 3 inches between the car door and getting out of the tunnel from the studio. And the mobs that descended, yeah. And they were like pulling at Jane Asher, was Paul McCartney's girlfriend at the time. Uh-huh. They were pulling at her hair. And we only just like made it into the limo intact. It was insane. So,
wow.
Anyway.
Day in the Life, The Beatles on KX93.5.
I saw a film today, oh boy. British army had just won the war. A crowd of people turned away, but I just had to look, having read the
I forget the name of that band, but it's a very popular tune, actually, isn't it, that one? It's Cakes 93.5. It's Laguna's only FM radio station. It's A Day in the Life by the Beatles, of course. And Sharon James is here, and she was present at the mix, which is just a phenomenal idea to me. And it's not any ordinary mix, of course. It's pretty astounding, even for today's, by today's standards. I don't know, man. If you walked into a record company with that today, you couldn't get arrested. You'd never get a deal.
You think?
Not in a million years.
Because?
I just think it's too complex. It's not a pop song, you know.
Yeah.
And yet, of course, they were already the biggest thing in the world, you know, by that time. And they could have really done anything, but it was apparently astounding. People, you know, the Beach Boys were blown away by it. The Rolling Stones thought that was the end of their career. In fact, let's talk about the Rolling Stones a little bit. Beatles, Stones. Do you ever hang out with the Stones?
Roadman at 16, like when they were first starting at Ilpi Island.
I'm sorry, who did we just... I missed that.
Road-managed Mick.
Who road-managed Mick?
My then-boyfriend and I. This was like, you know, I was 16, John was 18. And, you know, we would take them to their gigs, Mick in the back seat, kind of with his mouth wide open, fast asleep. they were at Ilpi Island. So you were either really Stones people or you were Beatles people. Like, the Stones were the mods, in a way, and the Beatles weren't rockers, but...
That's interesting. I would think of the Rolling Stones as being rockers, but I suppose, I don't know, back in the day it was...
No, they were mods. They were, like, winkle pickers.
Oh, yeah. Skin tight.
Although, I mean...
Drain pipe jeans.
Yeah, that was kind of... That would have been, like, Valley, you know, the equivalent of Valley now, I suppose.
Huh.
Here, you know what I mean? But Mick was, of course, you know, very middle class, went to LSE, London School of Economics.
Yeah. He was a posh bird as well, wasn't he?
He was posh, yeah. He was posh. But they were more like for the mods, you know.
Interesting.
At Pie Island. But Marianne I met, not with Mick. This was way pre-Mick.
This is Marianne Faithfull.
Yeah, because we were talking about As Tears Go By, because that's the other song that is reminiscent to me of an era. So Marianne was brought into, we were kind of a pub gang. You know, we met at the pub and played darts. That was our thing at 16. You could drink in England at 16.
could you drink or could you drink? I mean, it wasn't legal.
No, totally legal.
It was legal.
Absolutely, 16.
When did they change it to 18 in Britain?
I don't know. A while back, maybe when they changed the pub hours too. Because, you know, pub hours were till 11 o'clock at night. I don't know when how late.
And they were open during, but they were open at lunchtime as well. It was something to do with the munitions
factories.
They opened
lunchtime from like 11 to 2.
Yeah.
And then I think they opened again around 5:30 and stayed open till
It was
11.
To stop working men drinking all afternoon. It closed the pubs after lunch. It was a munitions factory
That's
thing.
That's right. It's true.
From the Second World War.
It's true. And then I think they decided when they, that it would be better to keep the pub open all hours so that people didn't just race to
run,
get in as much drink
kind of
as
thing.
They could before the pub closed.
Well,
but another boyfriend, when I say boyfriend, I mean these were guys I kind of dated a little bit and then
people
didn't.
Are thinking, my God, this woman must be riddled with syphilis.
But I dated a guy called John Dunbar, who Marianne Faithfull actually married. And I remember John bringing Marianne into the pub when she was like a 16-year-old little in her school uniform, you know, from a convent with her little socks and her, you know, little school uniform. And she was beautiful. She was not depraved at all. And actually, when she started, in fact, with this song, she was this shy little convent girl, beautiful, beautiful. Well, and then, of course, she became famous for other things.
Well, we've got a recording of her singing As Tears Go By, the Rolling Stones song, Marianne Faithfull, who got sloppy seconds to Sharon James back in the 1960s. Here we go.
Children play.
It's KX 93.5. It's Laguna's only FM. Marianne Faithful there at the Rolling Stones song As Tears Go By. Talking with Sharon James here on Full English Breakfast. She's got a show on this radio station on a Sunday night at 6 o'clock. And always an interesting, eclectic mix, that that show of yours. You have a, you pick a theme.
I do, yes. And I sort of score it and just find whatever information I can that's relevant. Unless I have an interview, and then, well, the interview is also a theme. But if I don't have an interview, I'll just pick some philosophical topic to riff on and find all sorts of things I can about it and learn about it myself, which is the fun part.
It's a great idea. I know you've interviewed me for it before. And
I have.
So you just come up with a thing, and people get to talk about that thing. Rather than, thank you, but rather than sort of ask them about their lives or whatever, it's, you, as you say, you pick a sort of philosophical talk. Give us an example.
I don't know. I guess last week I did authenticity. Should we be authentic or should we not be authentic?
And what does it mean? That's interesting, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, the advantages of being your real self and the advantages of not being your real self.
Difficult, actually, isn't it? It's very difficult. I'd love to talk to you about that.
Yeah. Well, listen to the show and see what you think.
Well, you know, I first started doing Full English Breakfast. I wasn't sure what my radio voice would be. I was a volunteer, so never been on the radio before. You know, right. Other than being interviewed myself as a musician, and the first couple of shows, if you go back to the podcast, I'm kind of talking like this. I'm being a little bit, you know.
I know. Hey.
and it took not very long, I realised that I can't keep this up. I'm going to just have to be me because I can't, you know. And especially on the radio now for 26 hours a week. You know, there's no way you can pretend to be somebody you're not. You know, I think that's... and I think people do sort of... They like it. They can relate to a real person. So, you know, if you sort of put on an announcer's voice, who can relate to that?
Right.
It's too weird.
Right.
Unless you are a wacky sort of character.
Yes, yes. Know. And it's too, you know, when we used to interview voiceovers, you know, audition them, I mean, I always hated the ones that were sort of that, you know, that kind of up, that very gurgly announcer voice, you know.
Yeah. But
it's much easier to have somebody that's just straightforward, I think. Anyway.
Well, I hope that people are listening and they feel that this is an authentic conversation because that's, to me, engaging. And you are very engaging, Sharon James. And how long have you been in the United States?
40 years.
40, 40 years.
40 years.
40 years.
Actually, not quite. Just coming up for 40.
Seen a lot of changes.
I've seen a lot of changes here in Laguna Beach.
Yeah.
Haven't you?
I've been coming here that long myself because my dad lived here when I was a kid. So I used to come out on vacation, but... Yeah, it's. I mean, Orange County, anyway, has certainly changed.
Absolutely.
And they say that Laguna has, but I was never really aware of Laguna. Although, no, it's not true. I remember when it was kind of hippie, and I remember when it was gay, and it's certainly not like that anymore.
That's right.
You know, so
that's right.
I guess it's changed. Yeah. Why did you come out to the United States? Was it work?
No, but you know, I was a product of the '60s in London, and then in the '70s. It wasn't the 60s anymore. So I was looking for new pastures and I came to New York actually and fell head over heels with New York. Absolutely head over heels. It's like if I can't be here, I'll die. And and there was a boy too that was nice. But that wasn't really it. It was...
Can't say I'm surprised, Sharon. Learning a lot about you today. Certainly lost any respect that was, you know, I had for you has gone there. No.
So I came out to New York and I kind of packed a suitcase and cashed out my little mini bank account, which was very mini because even though I'd worked for years there, the money they paid women at that time was dreadful.
Yeah.
And I just sort of, I burnt my bridges. I thought, you know, I'm just going to, if I kind of have a fallback position, I won't be... doing it. So I just came with my suitcase and I stayed. I got a lawyer to get me my green card. I got somebody to get me my green card.
Sponsor you kind of thing.
Sponsor me.
That was in New York?
That was in New York.
Yeah.
With a friend who owned an art gallery.
Much easier in those days to get a green card.
It was, but it wasn't easy. You know, it still, I you know, had to be sponsored and it was a guy that I'd met in London who'd said, you know, if you need anything, when I told him I was coming out to New York, And he said, if you need anything when you're out here, call me. And I called him. I said, yeah, get me my green room.
Yeah.
And he could because he owned an art gallery. So I actually worked at the art gallery a little bit when I first came out. And then he and his wife, who was a Romanov princess, became my surrogate family.
And you're like sort of denying you're not a posh bird.
No, but I mean, they still are fantastic.
We all move in those kinds of circles, Sharon. It's not really, nobody's impressed.
No. And a bit of name dropping there. But they used to do Russian Easter every Easter. They'd do Pasha and Kulish, you know, and they do the whole bit.
What is that? What's Pasha and Kulish when it's a tale?
It's kind of like a sort of a cheesecakey thing, like a cream cheesecakey thing. It's a very Russian dish. And they actually had Fabergé eggs, so they would bring them out Russian Easter. They had real ones. All the kids had them, and Marina had them, right. And everybody had them.
We had Cadbury's cream eggs, if we were lucky.
And that's where I met, I know we don't have time for it, but that's where I met Sam Barber, and that's my favourite piece of classical music possibly ever, the Adagio for Strings. But I know we don't have time.
Yeah, we don't have it. We've got Ella Fitzgerald.
Yes, and that is my youth. That's my dad. My dad was played the piano like a dream. He would boogie-woogie everything, though. He would play everything like Fats Waller. Everything was pedal. But he could come back from a trip to the theatre from a musical and play the entire score by ear. He was incredible.
Wow, I've got that kind of memory. I've met musicians like
that. Yeah,
that
kind of memory. But he was, you know, it was all, you know, Thelonious Monk, Errol Garner, Ella. That's what I grew up with.
Jazz and bebop and some standards and whatnot.
Yes. Yeah. Not so much bebop, but definitely like heavy jazz.
Yeah. All right, we've got a track from her now, Ella Fitzgerald singing You Go To My Head on Cakes. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Why I chose this is because my husband actually sang this on Broadway, and he sang it to me at our wedding.
How cute. It's KX93.5 Full English Breakfast with Sharon James.
like a summer with a thousand Julys. You intoxicate my soul with your lies. Though I'm certain that this heart of mine hasn't a ghost of a chance in this crazy romance. You go to my head. You go to my
head. I tell you what. Ella Fitzgerald on KX 93.5. How gorgeous is that? And if anybody... Now, during that song, Sharon and I were talking about something, you know, different, you know. We're just chipping on and we'd like to know what BDSM stands for. If anybody wants to call in, who can do it in a clean fashion, 949-715-5936. No one's going to call. No, I don't think anyone's going to call me that. We don't know
They're
what it means.
Church.
Because we were talking about how that, you know, to, the way that they were, it was this moment in time that these singers and those songs were written post-Victorian times when people could actually begin to talk openly about what it felt like to be in love, you know, pre-marriage, let's say. Excuse me. And yet, of course, they weren't allowed to do the kind of things that they do in hip-hop today or... It was pre...
They wouldn't have even allowed a title like that.
No, well, you know, it's pre-porn. Kind of. I mean, I'm sure there was that, you know, you could find whatever you wanted probably back then, but...
It wasn't public.
It wasn't public, no, and it wasn't everywhere. And
it was
you
could, sweet.
You weren't going to write a song about, you know, spanking each other. It's not going to make it into the top 10. You go to my head, Ella Fitzgerald there. Okay, it's 93.5. It's lovely to talk to you. Sharon James has got a radio show on a Sunday afternoon on this very radio station, KX93.5. It starts at 6 p.m. And she does interviews. Tell me if I'm getting this wrong. She does interviews, and then when she hasn't got an interview, she comes up with some philosophical idea and gets people to talk about their ideas of what that thing is.
Or finds things like TED Talks or...
Oh, really?
You're
doing stuff like that now? I haven't heard the show for a while.
Yes.
Right, so you're taking audio from other places.
I am.
And putting it together.
I hope that's
that way.
Allowed.
Of course it's allowed. Of course your background is in TV production, so
yes.
The idea of how to tell a narrative that way from using editing is your world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Do you like the new technology? Do you like the way it works?
Well, you know, I kind of never did the audio editing myself, which I do now.
Yeah.
You know, there was always the nice thing about being a producer is everybody else does the work. You just tell them
what
to
do. You just stand around and go, do this, I have an idea. No, everything you did for the past 4 days, we're going to scrap it and do something different. Yeah.
So it's really nice being hands-on, because also you can do, you know, you're not answerable to anyone. You can
That's
do totally
true.
Your own thing.
Yeah.
So I love that part.
I'm going to go home this afternoon and do exactly that. I'm going to do some production for the station. I've got a little studio.
Oh, I thought you meant
you're
going to totally do your own thing. I thought, we don't need to hear it.
We're going to do some BDSM if we can find out what it is. Now, look, I really want to play this. Perhaps we should play it last, but I don't want to miss out on playing this. It's so British, so quintessentially British, this next piece of music. I mean, it does not get more British than this in terms of the tune, it's the song itself and the way it's being performed. Talk a bit about the Proms, for people that don't know what it is.
The Proms, it's actually, it's the Promenades, and it was for to bring classical music and band music, actually bandstand music, to those people that could not afford to go to an opera house or a concert hall. So it would be walkabouts, and they would do it at bandstands in parks and stuff like that. But the reason I chose this is really just it's Elgar and it's Blake that wrote it, and
yeah.
It's so evocative, the green fields, you'll hear the words, and I sing it every time the plane starts to descend into England on England's pastures green. Oh, I sing it and I start crying.
You are quintessentially English posh bird. So wait, so the proms, now we think of it as this sort of this week-long festival at the Royal Albert Hall.
That's right. Well, it was taken over by the BBC on an official basis and has become, you know, an official thing that is open to the general public for very little money. I think it's standing...
Yeah, you can stand, that's right. They take out the chairs and you can stand downstairs unless you can afford a box upstairs. Posh birds like you go... Sorry to harp on. But they... So they and it's the BBC Orchestra and the Royal Philharmonic and the Symphony Orchestra, and they all play throughout the week. They play all different... a lot of very famous music to bring that to the... to the general public.
And in fact, after this piece, they played God Save the Queen, which you probably won't get to. But
but
they do it at the end of all. This is last night at the prom, so everyone goes wild.
The last night's pretty crazy. It's like a football match or something. They've all got banners and they sing and the big song. Everybody's waiting for this song, and as you say, it's Elgar. And it's Blake. The phone's ringing. Somebody's calling in with BDSM.
Oh,
never mind, we don't care.
No, we'll take it.
No, we won't.
While we play this.
No, we'll play the song. last night at the proms.
I want to know.
We'll find out. I can Google it.
Okay.
We'll find out that later.
I don't dare, because then you'll get all the porno sites.
Oh, I don't care about that. My computer is completely full of viruses. the proms. Jerusalem is the name of the song. Till we have built Jerusalem in England's green and pleasant land. These are people who've never been to Jerusalem, but never mind, it's okay. They're just Brits doing their thing. Here they are. Not a dry seat in the house. It's so great how they like they're whistling at the beginning. Like you never see that, never think of that at a classical concert. But then that whole crowd are singing it.
Yeah,
you know, it's a little bit patriotic. It's probably a little bit nationalistic for my taste.
Jingoistic.
Yeah, a little bit. On the other hand, you know, give them one day a year, why not? You know,
absolutely.
So a lot of union flags flying and. All of that. It's really great. It's been wonderful talking to you, Sharon. I'm sorry that we
have
to
Jace.
We have to pack it in now because Steve Reed's up next here on KX 93.5. It's been Full English Breakfast with Sharon James. Do listen to her show, 6 o'clock on Sundays, the sharing hour, or the sharing hour.
A pun on
your name. Sharon, not Sharon. Where'd that... Oh, you know. We should have asked that way earlier on.
No, it's sharing without the D. You know.
Where does... Why? Because Sharon is an unusual name.
Yeah, it's just my parents didn't know how to spell it right. That's...
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay, simple as that. All right, so we got one more track to play and then we'll go out and Steve will be on. We'll say goodbye. Talk a little bit about this song, Aguas de Marco.
Okay, it's just, if you hear the words also in English, it's like, it's all about life and life coming forth in spring. But I love that Brazilian beat.
The Portuguese sort of vibe.
Beautiful,
yeah.
Yes.
Again, it's one of those tunes like the French thing we played earlier on that really, if you don't know the what it means, it doesn't matter. It's so evocative and beautiful. All right, we're going to play it right now. It's Ellis Regina and Tom Jobim, brother of Antonio Carlos Jobim. And
wrote the music.
Yeah. Sharon, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jason. It's great fun.
Pedra é o fim do caminho, é o resto de toco, é um pouco sozinho, é um caco de vidro, é a vida, é o sol, é a noite, é a morte, é o laço, é o anzol, é peroba do cão,
é o rol da madeira,
canga também,
é o mate da pereira,
é madeira de vento,
da ribanceira,
é o mistério profundo.